It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and both Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are with us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, we're going to talk once again. We have talked about this a couple of times on the program about joint accounts with right of survivorship.
Okay.
Or designated accounts, if you will. Accounts that pass upon our death to the designated joint owner of the account or even by certain paperwork that we file with either the bank or the stock company that makes these accounts payable on death or time on death or joint with the joint with the joint holder. There's an article in Forbes that came to the attention of the law firm yesterday, and we have actually posted this article on our Facebook page as well as our law firm blog, and we would welcome our listeners to read it because it is a good source. But the article is entitled "When Joint Accounts, You Know, Backfire," and we are just seeing this, you know, all too often, Ben.
Right.
Now, the concept, to lay this up a bit, is that basically, you know, the article talks about a factual scenario where there were five children, five daughters maybe, I think. And the intention was that the accounts absolutely pass equally between the five children.
Sure.
And the will said that all assets were to pass equally between the five children. The problem is that usually there is one child, or maybe two, but many times one, who kind of comes along and takes responsibility there for the elder parent near the last stages of life.
Often maybe living with the parent.
Yeah, correct. Or the parent goes and lives with that child, or maybe just as proximate. And sometime during that period of time, end stage of life, an account gets registered or the accounts get changed, so that they are payable on death or joint with right of survivorship with the one daughter. And that is in fact what happened in this file. The other four daughters then of course had to sue, the one daughter saying that there was a breach of responsibility, there was undue influence, so as to attempt to set aside these accounts. And of course, that's the scenario. I know I'm talking a bit much this morning, hadn't let Wes talk yet. Why don't I do that a minute, Wes?
Well, yeah, I read the article as well, of course, and you know the way that ended up is I'm sure they spent a lot of money fighting over that issue, and it went up to the Court of Appeals, and you know the one daughter who benefited from her name being on this POD or joint account won, and the court found that there was no evidence of undue influence. You know, we sit here kind of scratching our head wondering really what the intent was of the person who passed away.
Yes, because that sort of gets glazed over once you assign that agreement to
the
payable on
death. You know, it doesn't smell quite right when everything she has, her entire estate plan, her will or trust, everything that she has leaves everything equally to all the daughters. And then probably what happened is we've got this one daughter who was maybe the caregiver or the local daughter, so on and so forth. They mosey on down to the bank, and she gets put on the account or the stock account or whatever it ended up
being. May have been recommended to do that.
That's
They may not have gone there with that intent. May have been recommended to them.
Right. There always needs to be that conversation. You know, what do you want to achieve here? Do you have a will? What is your estate plan? Have you talked with your lawyer about that? You know, those kind of things. Because, you know, once that's set up and, you know, what I was leading up to and it passes all to this one daughter, then it's very difficult to undo that. We see that in many, many files. Of course, we do just a ton of estate administration. And when I say estate administration, it's dealing with the wrapping up of the affairs properly from a tax perspective, from a debt perspective, from a dissemination of asset perspective of estates. And, you know, we deal with these children, And the children usually kind of know how things were supposed to go because mm-hmm. mom or dad or both of them indicated to them at some point in time how things were to pass. And we just run into this all the time where the intent of the person who's passed away is not fulfilled because of what we believe probably happened was a mistake in setting up an account. And it could have been
a bad result of good intentions.
Could have been years ago, have been shortly before death, you know. Another thing we see sometimes is, you know, maybe you just make the checking account joint.
Right.
And that's it and nothing else. Mm-hmm. But then that's done maybe years ago. And then maybe you name this one daughter out of the three or four daughters the mm-hmm. power of attorney. But at some point in time, there's a significant transfer of other assets into this checking account.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the checking account was a $10,000, $5,000, $12,000 account when
paying the monthly bills.
Paying the monthly bills. But by actions through the power of attorney, the daughter,
mm-hmm.
which she's totally allowed to do through the power of attorney, she liquidates some other accounts and puts it into the checking account. Oh, I want to have access to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, next thing you know, it's a $250,000 account.
Right.
And guess
right.
where that goes mm-hmm. when the person passed away? It goes to the one daughter.
Yeah.
There's no need for the daughter to be named, to be added as a joint owner on the account, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
We say this over and over again. Why does your child not need to be on your account? They do not need to be on your account because they can access your account through the power of attorney.
Right.
And accessing it as an agent through the power of attorney is completely and totally safe on all counts. Putting them as a joint owner strikes the match towards this improper distribution of the assets when there's a death,
mm-hmm.
which which usually does trigger litigation. Number two, it creates significant liquidity problems for mm-hmm. your estate, which I want to talk to right now in a moment, and tax problems. Now, liquidity problems, what do I mean by that? We have been waiting for probably now about a month
mm-hmm.
since the death of a very good client of ours who unfortunately named all of his accounts with his stock company payable on death. He
mm-hmm.
filled out one of the payable on death forms.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the assets have passed to four children.
Mm-hmm.
There is absolutely no money in the estate. We do not even have money to pay the funeral, to keep up the house, the light bill, the mm-hmm. power bill. All of this is having to wait.
Mm-hmm.
None of the children are able to advance those monies
mm-hmm.
for those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have now creditor issues that have come to play in the estate where we as the law firm are having to tell the creditor that, well, you will be paid. You will be paid
mm-hmm.
The
right.
funeral home. You will right. be paid power company, et cetera, but we do not have funds yet.
Please don't sue us.
Please don't sue us.
Or cut off the lights. Yeah.
So there are liquidity issues because of the fact that all what happened here is the classic example of, you know, let's, you know, throw out the baby with the bathwater. I mean, it would have been okay if there was a $10,000 account, some small account that was joint with the child.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we have the entire portfolio payable on death to the children. So now everything has been paid out to the children, and each child is having to ante back to the estate, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 in order to pay all of the expenses, maintain the home until such time as it can be improved and then sold. Well, this is extremely time intensive for the law firm and for the children and for the executor. And as a result of this, of course, what could have been a very straightforward estate has become very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So there are liquidity issues. We have another file in our office, again, similar to this, different problem
mm-hmm.
in terms of the fact that it was a very large account, almost $1 million account, actually. Can you imagine that?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine
right.
a stock company designating one child the payable on death for such an account as that? I mean, I really question these kinds of things, mm-hmm. okay? Well, this one child has inherited this account payable on death. And now he, of course, absolutely plans to split it mm-hmm. with his other two siblings.
Right. But that becomes an issue,
but
too.
That is a huge tax issue because yeah. he is not able to give $300,000, which is approximately what we're talking about here, to each of his brother and sister.
Right.
You're not allowed to give $300,000.
Without a tax
If you do
issue.
Give $300,000, there's then a tax consequence. We, of course, have been around our elbow and our thumb because we thought, well, we'll have him disclaim the account. Okay, mm-hmm. we'll have him dishonor the payable on death beneficiary. He can't disclaim it because if he disclaims it for tax purposes, he's then disclaiming or releasing his $300,000.
Right.
He doesn't want to do that. He just simply wants to be equitable. So we are probably going to have to suffer the tax consequence in this file.
Wow.
Okay, which was all because of the fact that such a huge account as this was designated payable on death or time on death.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we want to get back to some of those differences between that and some of the things that you fill out when you open an account or have an account. We'll have that coming up in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal. If you have a question, you can call us right now.
Call me at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. We're talking about payable on death accounts and avoiding them.
So again, Ben, I direct our listeners to the website and to the article written by one of the financial advisors with Forbes.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, in this article, and I was proud of this because Forbes, of course, is a national entity, and I now have just looked during the break. It is a Winston-Salem lawyer with mm-hmm. Womble Carlyle, which, of course, Womble Carlyle is kind of one of the, you know, premier, if not the premier law firm in the state of North Carolina. All of we lawyers are very proud of that law firm, Womble Carlyle. And this lawyer is with Womble Carlyle in their estate planning section, and she's asked the question, well, when do you use a joint account with right of survivorship? And I thought her answer, as I would expect, to be very good, which mm-hmm. is that if you have a small account, $20,000, you know,
right.
$15,000, you want to name the daughter on that so that there is some immediate money ready,
mm-hmm.
okay, for purposes of, do we have a caller?
Yeah, we have one coming up. Go ahead and finish your thought.
For purposes of, you know, flying the family in for the funeral, having the reception dinner at a local restaurant, paying the funeral, those immediate things that people worry about, then okay. In other words, keep it very minimal.
All right, let's talk to Mike and Hubert now. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. My father died in, 1996. And my mother has recently been contacted about a credit card debt, they're to pay that.
Mm-hmm.
Is she liable for that?
Was it just in his name, or was her name on the
yeah.
card, or do you know?
No, it was just his name on the card.
Mm-hmm. That statute of limitations would have long since run.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that would be a 3-year statute of limitations from the date the last payment was made.
Yeah, I'd be aware of that, yeah.
So if we're talking about him passing in 1996, she would have no obligation to pay that.
And even during the statute, it could be looked into that I can't give you a 100% guarantee, but generally speaking, the general rule is that a spouse is not responsible for the credit card debt of their husband or wife. Okay. You have to then look at the underlying debt. What was it? Was it medical necessaries, things of that nature? And sometimes an exception to the rule applies. But we've had many files in our office where the husband dies with a Lowe's credit open account or an account with, you know, one of the building supply companies or equipment companies or something of that nature for things that he bought that were his personal toys, if you will. His garden supplies, his workshop supplies, and the wife is not responsible to then pay that bill personally. Now, if they're estate assets, they have to be paid for out of the estate assets, but she doesn't have to go into her assets to pay him. So your first offense is, not that you even get to that point, my friend, because you don't, because of the statute of limitations. But if you, you know, the first defense, of course, is to look at the underlying debt. The second is to look at this timeline. Your creditor is barred by a timeline.
Right, and I'm getting bills from a collection agency.
Yeah,
right. They've just turned it over mass amounts to a collection agency, and they're trying to get whatever they can get.
I would write just a short letter back to them indicating that the claim is barred by the statute of limitations. They'll probably close the file if you do that.
Okay, but the money that she's already paid has just been paid, right? Gone.
Yes.
Yep.
Getting that back.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. She has also a deed of trust. She doesn't have a lot of stocks, or in fact, any stocks or anything like that. So she just made a will of deed of trust for the house and the property, you know. And she'd like to make some changes on the beneficiaries of that. Is that a very complicated process?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think it's very, I don't think, I'm not completely following your facts right now. You're using some terminology, my friend, that I'd have to ask a few questions about when you use the word deed of trust. But the point is that no, nothing that you're talking about sounds terribly complicated. It does sound as though you need some guidance. You know, and it could be easily given, probably, an hour or so. It doesn't sound to be anything overly complicated, but it does sound like there needs to be some very direct and specific advice to you.
Okay. Well, we got the paperwork from y'all's office.
Oh, okay.
About 3 years ago.
Okay. Well, uh-huh. Yeah, you just need to make contact.
Come in and see you. And my mother is not like, I just take her out all the time. You know, it's just, she's, you know, had a stroke and handicap on that way. It's just, I mean, she's all right, but it's
just, I understand.
Drag her out.
Yeah.
All right. This is what you need to do. You need to call the office since you already have contact with us, and ask to speak to me, Cecil here, Cecil Harvell, and I will, ask a few more pointed questions about this quote deed of trust that you're talking about, which is a little bit of an inquiry for me and a few other questions, and we'll try to get organized. We don't necessarily have to have your mother come in the office on the first appointment, and then we will try to get organized, and then at some point we may need her to come by the parking lot or something of that nature where we can get some paperwork signed. When I say the parking lot, what I mean by that, Ben, is that we many times do have handicapped people or people who are,
make it available.
Park in a handicapped parking. We go out to the car. We have our meeting in the automobile with the notaries, with the witnesses.
Interview them, make sure they're okay.
Yeah, it happens.
Right.
All right, Mike, you've got your marching orders there, though, so that'll help straighten that out. And we'll have more to come in a moment on Let's Talk Legal. Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Well, it seems from Mike's question and from this discussion about payable on death, every account is going to have its unique qualities, and you need to discuss those, right?
Yeah, that's right. You have to set up, you know, these accounts consistent with whatever your intentions are and whatever your estate plan, you know, is going to be. You know, sometimes we have run into situations before to talk about another scenario where basically all the liquid assets are passed, you know, to the children. And we have one or two children who don't want to contribute back to the estate to deal with the debts. Now, Cecil's already talked about that a little bit, but think about this in this context. In certain cases, we've had mortgages we have to pay.
Right.
And then where are we? We have three children. All of the assets are passed out, POD, to these three children, and two of them won't contribute back. We have no money to pay the mortgages. So we have the one child, and it falls on that one child's shoulders to cover the mortgage to keep the property from going into foreclosure. So how do we deal with that? Well, we have to file a petition, which is like a mini lawsuit before the court, have a hearing on it,
right,
and get an order of the court for assets to then be delivered back into the estate. It all costs money, takes time to do these things. So obviously, you know, in that type scenario, there's a significant problem there. And another thing I'd like to bring up is, of course, when we have a joint account with right of survivorship, the joint owner has the right to take all of the assets during the lifetime. They could liquidate the account and take the money.
Right.
Can't do anything about it. Legally, they have access to that. In the event that the joint owner, the child, has a twist or turn in their life, such as maybe they cause an accident of some sort, maybe they're in a car accident, and maybe that, you know, someone's seriously injured and they don't have enough insurance on the vehicle, through the vehicle, to cover that that loss. Well, then they have a judgment against them. That joint account is subject to the judgment. So, but if you operate through a power of attorney, then we isolate that account. That account is judgment proof as it relates to the children.
Another thing that you all have brought up about power of attorney as well, too, is, and it has also increased, is the accountability. The power of attorney has to, the attorney, in fact, has to make a documentation, has to make an accounting.
Right.
And that's become more strict.
Most good powers of attorney documents are going to have language in them that allows for accountings to be provided and upon request of beneficiaries for those to be provided, usually like on an annual basis, something like that. So, yes, and there's that fiduciary duty, of course, to operate for the benefit of that beneficiary through the power of attorney. So, yeah, no question that, that's the appropriate way to deal with these issues as an agent.
What happens here, Ben, in our last little moment, is that the client – so thinks that their child needs to have that money is tied down. This almost what I might call old fashioned way of thinking, if you will, which is very understandable, that everything is locked down. You know, we are able to open up an account in an estate here in Carteret, Onslow, Craven, Jones County in a matter of days. In a matter of days.
Right.
Now, that's as long as it's not, by the way, payable on death.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
Payable on death, time on death, joint accounts is our problem as a lawyer if guiding the family, not the account just in the name of the decedent. We can get that open in a matter of days, have funds for the estate, literally many times within the same week of a death, okay, and have plenty of funds. We have those funds within a few days. Payable on death funds take months. A month or more, maybe even 6 weeks, this one that I've been working on, okay, in order to get funds into the estate, not to mention the tax problems in the meantime.
If you want to find out more about how to take care of your accounts, you want to give the folks at Harvell & Collins a call, and you can call them and find them online at